श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, ग्रंथ श्रीमद् भागवत की जय, श्री श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर प्रमानंद हरि हरि वो। सो गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू, प्रणाम, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर कमिंग. The boat is connected online, over there, over here, here, there, and everywhere. And we are continuing today with our series of lectures on Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Sri Brahma. Today we are in verse 12, so we will do a brief recap of last verse that we saw last week here. Yeah, verse 11, which is in which Brahma was establishing basically that Krishna is the source of the first Purusha. Mahavishnu. Today he will establish how Krishna is the source of the second Purusha. And gradually he will get closer and closer to one of the main points of his presentation, if you will, which is Krishna is the source of Narayana, which is a big thing to say. For most, it's the opposite. Narayana is the source of Krishna. Krishna is an avatar of Narayana, but Gaudiyas will say, Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam. And that famous line really plays out in this section, Brahma Vimohan Lila, where unlimited Narayans are coming from one little Krishna. So Brahma is trying to make sense of what he has just seen, basically, through these prayers also. And through that establishing very clearly our own Gaudiya Siddhanta. So in the previous verse, Brahma said, "What am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? I am enclosed in a pot-like universe surrounded by Prakriti, Mahatattva, Ahankara, ether, air, fire, water, and earth. What is your glory? Countless universes pass through the pores of your body like atoms through a window." So Brahma is trying to put in words what he's experiencing, which is a form of chamatkar, as we spoke the other day. You know, in his own level, he's really, I mean, bimohan, getting close, is a similar word to express astonishment. So he's realizing, you know, he has landed from being the topmost being in the universe to have his head at the feet of Krishna in the soil of Braj, in the earthly, if you will, soil of Braj, leaving his status as Deva, at least in his own estimation, like leaving aside this idea, I'm the topmost of all Devas, but I'm insignificant at your feet. So use the word qua here to indicate this. Where? Two times. Where am I and where are you? And the idea is a type of alankar that implies there's no point of comparison. And if there's something in common, it's just very small thing, but actually we are speaking about two different personalities altogether, who you are and who I am. But the contrast is, some minutes ago, I thought you were this, and I thought I am here, and now I realize you are here, and I am here. So he's having this like strong epiphany about who actually Krishna is, and of course, correspondingly, who actually I am. I mean, the more you increase the relation, the realization in one of in that direction, you will increase. The more you know Krishna, the more you know who you actually are, basically. So Brahma in these prayers is basically implying you as Mahavishnu, unlimited universes, multiverses are expanding from your pores, but you remain humble. And I'm the architect of one single universe, and I think I'm the big guy here. And you remain humble while unlimited universes with Brahmas with many more heads than mine are expanding. So he's crying and increasing his humility at the feet of Krishna. And of course, the implication in all these prayers is, therefore you are such a great personality and I'm such a lowly person that you should show me compassion. He's trying to make his case for, again, I'm worthy of your compassion because I'm so unworthy. That makes me worthy of costless grace. No? Over and over again, he's making these points in this verse. No? What makes us worthy for costless grace? Our unworthiness. today won't be an exception to that rule. Mm-hmm. So today Brahma will continue and connect this situation. Krishna is not only the source of the first Purusha, but also the second Purusha. That will be the main point, building up to the idea of you are the source of Narayana. That will come in two verses more. So he's getting closer to that point. So I'll read verse number 12, which is in Upajati Chanda, particular meter, although the last line is a little bit irregular compared to the first three. So it says, Ukshipanam gharvagatasya padayo kim kalpate matra dokshayagase kim asti nasti vyapidesha bhushitam tabasti kukshe kiyadapyananta. So Brahmaji says, this is a particular name that through which he will address Krishna. And again, we will try to make the point every time throughout his prayers that Brahma is speaking or choosing to name Krishna, address Krishna in a particular way. That's not mere like casualty. Okay, I have to pick a name that fits in the meter of the verse. So we keep on proper chanda or something. Okay, now I have to call him Adokshaya, because if not, there will be some irregular. That's not the reason. There is a real reason, like Arjun calling Krishna addressing him with so many names, and each of them have a specific purpose for that moment. So that's the uniqueness of Krishna's names also, no? That they are accompanied by a particular emotion coming from a devotee. That's why especially we find Krishna's name so special, because it's not only a name of Krishna, but the name of Krishna is including his devotees there. Those are the main names, actually. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in Harinam Chintamani, he speaks Mokyanam, Gonanam. So Mokyanam are those names which speak about Krishna's relationship with his devotee. Like if you say Yashoda Nandam, it's the name of Krishna, but Yashoda is in the equation as well. Nanda Nandam, Radhanath, whatever. It's Krishna, but in relation to Bhakti. So it's the absolute with Shakti. The two are included, so that makes special Mokyanam. So here, Brahma will address Krishna as Adhokshaya. And we will see, interestingly, how besides the normal meaning of this name, there is a very interesting reason why he's addressing him like as such. O Sri Adhokshaya, does a mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks her with his legs? And is there anything whatsoever, whether designated by various philosophers as real or as unreal, that is not within your belly? This is today's verse. So here Brahma is resorting to the woman-womb analogy. We'll see that in all these verses there are so many of these type of comparisons with fire and sparks and so many other things. So I'll go with the word by word, and then we will try to unpack a little bit the content of the verse. Ukshepanam garbhagatasya padayo. So ukshepanam means the kicking. Garbhagatasya, which means of the child in the womb. So that's today's analogy. Padayo means refers to both feet of the child. So not only the child is kicking with one foot, but the two of them. It's a pretty intense one. First line. Kim kalpate madura dokshayagase. So kim means what here? Kalpate amounts to, like given this comparison. Matur. Matuhu means for the mother. And adokshaya means adokshaya. We will see what does it mean. The name of Krishna for sure. Agase means offense. And the third line again says kim. Kim asti nasti vyapadesha bhushitam. So kim means what? Asti means exists. Na asti means doesn't exist. Thank you so much. Just testing how much Ujjwal is doing his Sanskrit homework. That was 3 years ago for sure. But just in case, we have to go back.
Review.
What?
It's a review.
Yeah.
I'm not a fraud.
I have to test what to do. Vyapadesh means by the designations. Ambushitam means adorned. And in this case, actually means called. Refers. And last line says, Tabasti kukshe kiyadapyananta. So, tava your asti, there is. Kukshe refers to your abdomen, you say?
It's abdomen.
Abdomen. Okay. Kiyat, how much? Api, even, and ananta, external, in this case. So basically, that's the idea. Brahma is addressing Krishna as Adokshaya. I'm presenting this idea. The mother has a baby in the womb. The baby is kicking. And the mother won't take offense. So similarly, the point is, there's nothing outside your belly. Remember, he's referring now to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So everything, in one sense, is coming from him. As you know, from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu will come this lotus flower from which Brahma is born. So in a way, the analogy is proper for him. That's the point. Of course, this all is converging in Brahma himself saying, I'm your child. No, I was born from your belly, if you want to continue it, play out the analogy. So as the mother is not offended by the child kicking, I mean, please take my whatever I have done some minutes ago, some slight kicking in the mother's womb. Do not take offense, please show me compassion. Try to bear in mind this is the converging point of all these prayers. Please show me your compassion. Show me your compassion. So I'll begin sharing as I'm doing my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this, which will come in his forthcoming book. It's briefly, and he will basically present a brief dialogue between Krishna and Brahma here. And then we'll go to the ancient commentators. So Brahma is saying, O Adokshaya, you are also the second Purusha, Garbhodakshaya, presiding over this particular universe, from whom I appeared in the world, born as it were from the lotus-like umbilical cord emanating from your navel. As such, you are like my mother, and a mother does not take offense when her child kicks her within the womb. So Krishna may reply to this between the lines of the verse. You are given this analogy of the child within the womb. So Krishna says, but you are not within me. Now remember, Krishna is now in front of Brahma. But you are not within me, like a fetus? Fetus?
Yes.
Fetus is within the womb of its mother. No? And remember, Krishna is totally immersed in Brajabhav, so he's kind of saying, I mean, I'm a cowherd boy. Why do you say I'm your mother? What's going on here? I'm a cowherd boy. I'm a boy. You say I'm your mother? And you are within my womb? I mean, I'm here in front of you with a morsel of food. What's going on here? And of course, Brahma replies to that. Actually, you are asking me, Brahma is saying, that I'm not within you, but there's nothing outside of you. So there is a huge degree of course, Aishwarya in these prayers. And properly, as we'll see, the whole prayer series will progress more towards the intimacy of Braj. But in order to reach there safely, a proper foundation of Aishwarya is what actually allows Madhurya to happen. So actually, there's nothing outside of you. Such is the panentheistic nature of the world. You are my mother and my father. So previously, Krishna, here Brahma is referring basically to Krishna as his mother. In next verse, he will refer to him as his father to make the whole equation complete. Because in his particular case, he's born from Krishna, if you will. That's a unique situation, Brahma. He's born from this lotus who comes from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who comes from Krishna. And in that sense, Krishna is both mother and father. Brahma is realizing here this. Now, I mean, you, Krishna, are the source of my source, basically. Because Brahma's source is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu's source, ultimately, is Krishna. So he's, again, all this is making this point, Krishna's tu Bhagavan, so yeah, Krishna's tu Bhagavan, so, which is pretty extraordinary. Again, we take it for granted because from day one, Krishna's tu Bhagavan, so yeah. But you go somewhere else and you say,
Krishna,
of course, Krishna's God, Supreme Personality, and they will like, no. Narayan is God, or Brahman is the ultimate reality, and they have their arguments to do that, and they may even put you in a situation where you don't know how to reply to those arguments. But we have received this particular notion from day one, but it's nice to unpack that and play that out so we even further appreciate that idea. No? So Brahma is saying basically this idea, no? You are the supreme, and you are everything. That's one side of the Achintya Veda equation. Everything is God. mean, there's place for that. The Aveda side, which means non-different, means everything is non-different from God. Everything is God. So we are not promoting Advaita Vedanta. We are just saying everything is a Shakti of Bhagavan, and between Shakti and Shaktiman, there is no difference and difference at the same time. That's what Aveda. So my Guru Maharaj here is using the word panentheism, panentheism, which is another way of saying Achintya Veda Veda. No, you have theism, you have pantheism, and you have panentheism. Mm. Panentheism means all in God. Pan, all in theism. Theos, God. So this is actually our perspective. On one side you have like classical theism, like for example, many Christians will say, you have God and you have the world. And the two shall not meet, as they sometimes say. No? So I would say because of that particular stance, you have the big ecological crisis we have today in the world. Because of seeing the world disconnected from it, from God. So that takes us to treat the world in a non-sacred way, if you will. Again, I'm not blaming Christians for that, but I'm just trying to think. There may be implications to these type of ideas. Okay, God is there, holy, pure, transcendental, and here the world affected by low instincts and whatever. I mean, they won't say Maya. They will even go further, if you will. But they create this, if you will, dichotomy and that divorce between the two, and not seeing the world as a Shakti of Bhagavan in connection to its source makes us treat the world not in a very user-friendly way. Mm. So in part, that's the present ecological crisis coming from that type of theism. So you gain God, but you lose the world, in one sense. We are losing it. And on the other extreme, you have pantheism, which is the world is God. In that case, you lose God as a person, and the world became God. God became the world. So you venerate the world, the mountains, the river, everything, as sacred, but you don't have a personal conception of the divine. So you lose that side. So with one, you gain God and you lose the world. With the other one, you lose God and you gain the world. Mm-hmm. And in between theism and pantheism, you have panentheism, which for us is the ideal synthesis of both, which is another way of saying Achintya Veda Vedatra. It's God, everything in God. So the world is in God in the sense it's one Shakti of Bhagavan. So God remains as a person, and we see the world in connection to him as one of his Shaktis, and we relate accordingly. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with the world. No, it's a Shakti of Bhagavan. It's important that we as Gaudiyas do not develop this, like, it's a Shakti of Bhagavan. And the more we understand that Shakti, the more we learn to relate it, how to relate, and we won't be affected by that. Bhagavatam is saying that. He's saying, Mayam Varnayato Nusya Ishvaras Anumodata Shri Shradaya Shrimbanta Shradaya Nityam Maya Yatmana Muhyati. So basically this verse is saying, the more you speak about Maya and understand Maya Shakti, the more you are not affected by Maya Shakti. So, I mean, we kind of speak about Maya, that's not Maya. To be in Maya means you don't understand Maya. So it's one Shakti of Bhagavan, and we actually venerate that. Anyhow, that's another chapter altogether. So let's go to some of the ancient commentators, beginning with Sridhar Swamipad, who starts paraphrasing Brahma. He says, is the kicking of the feet of a fetus for the sake of offending the mother? And on top of that, is there anything outside your abdomen? Okay. Sorry, I'm practicing my English with all of you. So in this connection, Sridhar Swami mentions the word asti nasti vyapadesha bhushitam, means that anything that is called by the words being, not non-being, asti nasti, or subtle growth, or cause effect, all this is included in this notion of asti nasti, and nothing is outside of you, basically. So Sridhar Swami said, basically this phrase implies sarvam vastu, all things are inside of you. In this way, by Brahma asking, is there anything at all outside your abdomen, the sense is, there's nothing at all. That you are all, how to say, encompassing, all pervading. Although you are appearing in front of me, everything is inside of you. We have to, again, recalibrate our way of conceiving this type of thing, because it's, according to our three-dimensional experience, it doesn't work, it doesn't fit. If something is inside, it's not that it's outside, but with Krishna that's the case. He's outside, he appears in front of Brahma, but at the same time everything is. So the gist of the verse, basically Sridhar Swami is saying that Brahma is implying my offense should be forgiven, like an offense is to be forgiven by a mother. If the baby is kicking her mother in the womb or doing some other nonsense, the mother, I mean, will be charmed by that even. Mm-hmm. No, not what to speak of being offended. No. Because everything is contained within your abdomen. I am like such a baby. Basically, that's the presentation. I behave like a baby, Brahma is saying. Yeah. Although I'm known like a grandfather of the universe and the grands, I'm very knowledgeable and this and that, I'm a baby. And I'm behaving like a baby. So please, Mom, forgive me. Something like that. That's the implication of the prayer.
Maharaj, could we say there's like a, you know, the baby is frustrated to be in the womb. Mm-hmm. And so Brahma's admitting some kind of adolescent frustration with the arrangement of Krishna in that moment. There was some pride that compelled him to say, let me teach this little upstart a lesson, not knowing that actually that's Mom.
That's a good one, yeah. Thanks so much for the contribution. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there are many layers, as you can see. Sanatana Goswami presents a very interesting layer, now turning the situation from another side, and there is place for that. He will say, an offense done by you, by persons like me, cannot affect you. Why? Because you are Adokshaya. He will focus now on the name Adokshaya. That, as you know, generally will mean beyond the mind, the reach of mind and senses. So one level of meaning could be, okay, since you are beyond the reach of mind and senses, whatever I can do, I may do to you. I am on the platform of mind and senses. I'm not beyond that, but you are beyond that, so you shouldn't be affected with any nonsense I may be doing from where I am. You are beyond. Adokshya means beyond, overtly transcendental, as we say the other day. So Brahma, again, aprakrita, as we mentioned, it seems mundane, but it's supramundane, like Krishna and Vrindavan. Adokshaya means that's overtly transcendental. Brahma is having that level of epiphany here. No? I mean, I'm realizing that you are not ordinary as I thought. So that's a well-known meaning of Sadokshaya and how Sanatana Goswami explains on one level, but there is a deeper level in connection to how the Brajavasis conceive this name. Because Brahma is saying Adokshaya, but the Brajavasis is also called Krishna Adokshaya, interestingly. So you may wonder, why? Because Brajavasis won't tell Krishna, you are beyond mind and senses and you are overtly God. I mean, that's not happening to them. As we say the other day, when Krishna left Govardhan and some of the Brajavasis came to Nanda Maharaj, the elder one said, we're wondering if Krishna is, okay, let's not say God, but maybe a Deva,
yeah,
which is already to my border in Prajalpa, in Braj, to say that. Maybe Krishna is a demigod. Are you talking about? Or someone special? There is something special. I mean, till before the Govardhan Lila, we were thinking, I mean, Krishna is one of us. That is Brajavasis psychology. He's one of us. Of course, all of us are totally charmed by him, but he's one of us. And of course, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. His abhiman is, I'm one of you. Krishna is not thinking, I'm special. I'm one of you. So they say to Nanda Maharaj, maybe he's something special. And interestingly, Nanda Maharaj will, first of all, will quote the Aishwarya side of the equation, saying, well, Gargacharya said this. And then that's the Aishwarya side of the equation. He's quoting someone else. Yeah, Gargacharya said this. But then comes the Madhurya side of the equation. And Nanda Maharaj said, for me is my son. Like implying, I heard someone else saying other things, but my personal experience is this one. So he's making that point. Okay, yes, Gargacharya say this. We know these rumors are being spread here and there. But my direct pratyaksha is my personal direct experience is he's my Lala. Oh. End of story. Everyone's okay. Yeah, anyway.
<That's> satisfied.
No need a further debate or something like that. It's like he doesn't need to. Okay, let's quote Shastra and argument. So the point is, but now in Braj, Krishna has been called a Dakshaya. So the question is, how you can accommodate such a name in the Braj? So in this case, Adokshaya will mean he who was born, or he was as if born again, Ja, under a cart. On the cart's, how it's in English? Axle? The cart's axle?
Yeah.
Which is Adoksha in Sanskrit. So Adoksha means the cart's axle, and Ja means like if born again. So what's the connection with this? There are basically, Sanatana Goswami will quote Haribamsa Purana, and there Narada Muni is describing how when Putana, and this is a little bit slightly different depiction of the Lila than the one we find in the Bhagavatam, but that's what Sanatana Goswami quotes. When Putana approached Krishna to feed him, Krishna was sleeping behind, below a cart's axle. Which again, in the Bhagavatam, that situation is more akin to Sakatasura's Lila. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we find this like different. You take it as you like, with Putana or with Sakatasura. But the point is, according to Haribamsa Purana, Putana offered her breast there, and eventually was killed by Krishna. So the Brajavasis, when they realized all that happened, and they saw Krishna like walking, crawling on Putana's giant body, they say, oh, Krishna has been born again. No? Under that cart's axle. So that's, they named him, oh, Adokshaya. So that's interesting idea. The Brajavasis will call Krishna all these Aishwaric names, but for them there's no Aishwar in any of those names. No, they know how, they have their psychology somehow accommodates all that Aishwar in a way that is just simple and charming and intimate and in a village setting and has all to do with their, with his daily lilas, basically. You know? And you can apply all these different names, Vishnu, Narayan, and all this opulent stuff. They will somehow filter through their intimacy and becomes, increasing their madhurya. So here's one example of Dakshaya. So the question is, why Brahma is using that name here in connection to the Brajavasis? Sanatana Goswami makes a very interesting point. Brahma is using this name to strengthen his case for being forgiven by Krishna. Why? Because he's hinting at this lila. Okay, you were a child when you were about to be killed by Putana, and during your with Adokshaya, Brahma is pointing to Krishna's Balya Lila, his childhood lilas, where he's pretty much famous for being mischievous. So you were mischievous during the childhood lilas. Your parents always forgave you from all the things you did. No? In your pastimes as a child, you incurred in thievery. You stole butter, you broke so many things, so many offenses you committed. No? So the people in Braj always forgave you. They always gave you your mercy. So for this reason, please, you should also forgive my offense now. Now I'm the child doing some mischief, no? Some offense. So please, as you have been forgiven by your elders in Braj, please forgive me. So Brahma is starting to awake to this Braja sensibilities, to understand how Krishna has this type of psychology and how, okay, this will work better. If I approach him in connection to the Braja Lila, that will create the desired result. I need to be forgiven by him. So that's Sanatana Goswami's deeper explanation of the name, why the name of Dakshaya is here.
Has Brahma already mentioned the situation with Putana, or is he kind of like, he's beginning to, because he mentioned about how Krishna gave himself to Putana.
No, that will come after this.
That's coming after.
Yeah. No, this has been just mentioned by Sanatana Goswami. Okay. Like, in between the lines, Brahma is implying that with the name, although not mentioning it overtly, but he will then make that point eventually. Yeah. So yeah, he's aware of that particular lila. So that's what Sanatana Goswami says. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami before wrapping up. He goes to Adokshaya. Let's continue with Adokshaya. Go back to more general meanings of Adokshaya, which according to Jiva Goswami, Adoksana means he who has the power of the senses under his control. Similar way to say beyond senses and mind. So with this, Brahma is implying, I am under your control. You have control, full control under the power of mind and senses. I am under the control of mind and senses, so I am under your control, who have control of that. So according to Jiva Goswami, Brahma is saying, I'm a foolish, I'm a wretch, and you should not take offense. We see that all these commentaries converge into, do not take offense. Because, again, Brahma is realizing how great was what he did, how delicate. So
something offensive.
So, of course, this is pretty instructive to us in the sense, again, not neurosis, but if you realize you have engaged in some offense, I mean, you should do something. And it's not just like, oh, sorry, Ujjwal, for the offense. Can you forgive me? Yeah, I say yes, thank you. And I continue my life. Like, Brahma is at the feet of Krishna and crying, foreheads, eight eyes, taking turns and bathing Krishna's feet and really repentant. And again, not neurosis, but I mean, if you really love and appreciate whom you offended, you will react accordingly. You know? It's just a way of making your heart softer, actually. That's what's actually going on. It's not neurosis and we are like going crazy, but it's just like becoming more and more sensitive and humble. Or Jiva Goswami says, if we take Adokshaya as the classical name, he who is beyond mind and sense perception, then this implies that Brahma committed his offense because he was not able to recognize Adokshaya with his own limited mind and senses. Although Brahma has pretty, skillful mind and senses. I mean, he's a pretty smart person to be the architect of the whole universe. You have to know what to do. Like, start from scratch. Okay, now create everything. Create, in one sense. But nonetheless, in connection to Adokshaya, Brahma's intelligence and sense perception is like, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka, and so on. So Brahma is realizing all the things. Again, Brahma is realizing, I'm not as great guy as I thought I was, something like this. No? And as many others were thinking I was, in comparison to, and of course, by him saying that, he's a great personality for us. No? It's not that he's not great, but he's having this epiphany in contrast with Krishna's greatness. And similarly, also by giving the example of someone who entered the womb that he gives here, Brahma hints at his present condition. Jiva Goswami says that Brahma feels himself completely sunk, completely like in that particular situation. Sometimes describing that connection, I'm in total vimohan. Brahma vimohan, I'm covered. So also that's a way of understanding the analogy of the womb, Krishna. Brahma feels, I'm still in the womb, if you will. I'm still covered. I pray to be born by your grace, basically. Jiva Goswami, again, unfolds this idea further, paraphrasing Brahma. Is the striking with both feet in the mother's womb for the sake of an offense to the mother? No, it is not so considered. On the contrary, it is for the sake of the mother's joy. The mother will think when feeling the kicking, I have a baby. The baby is alive. The import is, Brahma says, you should think of it in that way. It was not for the sake of offending. So he's very tricky in a nice way in trying. We have to be skillful in how we present our prayers so we can really obtain what we need. He really realizes, I need to be forgiven here. I need mercy. So he's given this analogy in this way also. No? Like the mother not only does not take offense, but the kicking is a sort of delight for her. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a baby. I didn't know I had a baby. Now I realize there is somebody there. Oh, so I'm so happy he's alive. That's the same. No? So in the same way, my kicking, my offense should be like a source of joy. Or at least do not take offense. Something like that.
Really, you should be happy.
And again, we are not implying Brahma is trying to manipulate Krishna or anything, because he's realizing how little he can manipulate Krishna. He tried to kidnap, to move some pieces, and it didn't happen. But somehow, in a charming way, he's And again, remember he's feeling attracted to relate with Krishna in Sakya. That was he expressed in the beginning of creation. So Sakya also implies this one-on-one level. So he's having this type of glimpses and sometimes crying and being totally repentant, but in the midst of that expressing some of that mood he hankers for, ultimately, you know, to relate with Krishna's friends. Although, of course, the example here is more mother-child, but in the context of that, he's expressing his... So you want to say something?
I was just thinking about this, and somehow from the beginning of the presentation, I was really feeling that it seems like the operative thing here is Lord Brahma's sincerity in his expression of all this, because I've never seen it like this before, but it could be construed as kind of repugnant, the way he's like trying to convince so much that actually it's not bad what I did, actually you shouldn't even take any mind to it. It's like from the perspective of looking at like a common example or what we would expect from someone, normally the archetype that we would take is like, well, no, it's all my fault and, you know, I'm sorry, but I have no reason to be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas we see Lord Brahma, who's supposed to be like the most respectful and like honorable person in the universe. And if we didn't account for the sincerity that's there underneath his motive, then it would looks kind of grimy. That he's like, well, you should even be kind of happy about this. You know, why don't you... This is not only is it not bad, but kind of good. Like, you should like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just somehow, as you've been presenting this, and I was thinking, what is the thing that is making it not like that? As I think Deva's comment kind of put me in that place, because you asked about, like, the adolescent teenager, you know, the teenager who's... frustrated and you know, thinking about like the parent dynamic, always trying to cheat the parents. Well, I didn't do the dishes because, and you know, I'm gonna get to them.
And, yeah, actually, we are in verse 12 here, so the important thing here is also to keep the context of the sequence and the unfolding of the prayers. It's not just that he prays in one same level, if you will.
Certainly.
And so, if we go to previous verses, I didn't explain being here, if you will, but we were studying some weeks ago. Brahma is expressing himself mostly in this, more in this direction, that I shouldn't be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the worst possible rascal on creation. And I'm the creator of that. So this type of heavy, like, weeping, self-weeping, if you will. So he's passing through that. He's not
like
that he's, like, jumping directly, like, you should actually feel happy for my... It was just like a loving...
Yeah.
So he has gone through that type of humility.
Mm.
And nonetheless, the point of the chair is Brahma's humility keeps rising, keeps growing.
Yeah.
It's not that now he's becoming
prouder.
Yeah, now he fell again into...
Yeah.
So that's another form of humility, which makes the point that humility won't necessarily always express in the same way.
Yeah.
Because we may have some like idealized form, okay, this is humility.
Yeah.
Bus. For some stage, but maybe higher humility will appear as lower humility to the untrained eye. So that's what's going on here. It may seem like, why Brahma is saying that?
Yeah.
But actually, his humility keeps growing,
yeah.
And that's what allows him to approach Krishna in such a apparently bold way.
Yeah.
And that all this is giving us a further glimpse of what's the Brajavasi situation, which seems they are so bold with Krishna. They are treating him like sad, like this. They are calling him names, but actually they
like
have the highest level of humility, which is not playing out overtly in the dynamics of the Leela, apparently to our eyes, but when the necessity arises, you see, oh my God, they have such humility.
Mm.
What to speak when they appear in Gaur Leela, as Rupa Goswami, Sanatana, I mean, their humility is painful to Mahaprabhu. No? He says that to them, like, he's basically saying to Rupa and Sanatana, please stop, you are being too humble.
Yeah.
Imagine that. I mean, to Mahaprabhu, who is that humble, and he's saying, stop being that humble, you are being too humble, please, it's a pain in my heart. And they are the Brajavasis coming. So the point here is that one. Yeah, I mean, Brahma's humility is increasing to a point where it doesn't seem humility anymore for some. Similar to the Brajavasis, many of the things the Brajavasis do not seem humble, correct, legal in how one is supposed to relate with God.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what took Brahma to be bewildered in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, he went to the Braj and saw this total informal situation, Krishna having picnic with his friends and all of them eating with the wrong hand. No, and Brahma is the personification. I mean, you can be Brahma if you follow all the rules of Varnashram perfectly for 100 lifetimes. So you can imagine how paka Brahma is in how to do everything. And suddenly he sees this circle of friends eating with left hand and friends tasting, oh, this is so good, Krishna, have a try. And giving Krishna their own remnants.
Yeah.
And it's like, Brahma was like, what's going on here? This doesn't seem humble, correct. How you treat God.
Nice.
Yeah, all this is hoax. Mm. Even Krishna is a hoax. It's not the Krishna I saw at the beginning of creation. And that, so they follow. So now that took him to, I mean, that took Krishna to show what he showed to Brahma. Brahma now is realizing all that and he's praying. But gradually his prayers, he has received a hint of Brajabhav. And he wants that. So now in his prayers, he's getting closer and closer to what he wants. And that's why in the midst of his prayer, sometimes you find elements like how a Brajabhas, if you will say Krishna. Hey, don't take offense. Actually, it was for your pleasure. So. Mm-hmm. On some level, again, Brahma is not yet there fully, but he's expressing like drops of that. And the more his prayers like progress, the more he will get closer to being a Brajavasi, basically, because that's his longing.
To that point, because I was curious, because you mentioned how Krishna's in this Abhiman where he's thinking like, I'm not your mother. I'm just a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right in front of me. Can we understand too that Brahma is also kind of positing to be of more service to serve Krishna's lila more? Like he's kind of maybe changing some of the tone of his prayers to be more of service to Krishna's mood.
Yeah, we could say like that. Of course. Of course. Again, he's not fully yet there, but he's having a glimpse of that specifically, because wanting to be there means wanting to be of service according to who Krishna is there. Mm. So again, he said to Krishna, yeah, I want to be your friend, but at the beginning of creation, he didn't have the full picture of which are the implications of his request,
yeah.
And which is the Krishna that corresponds with that request.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the beginning of creation, Krishna was more in the role of a guru, showing Gyan Mudra and instructing Brahma, Chatur Shloki, and so on. So everything was more formal. But Krishna shake hands with Brahma, that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. But it was more in a friendly way. So that gave Brahma a glimpse of, oh, I would like to be your friend. on the level of what he could glimpse at that moment. So Krishna said, okay, tatashto. And in time, he gave this trailer of, okay, this is what it means to be my friend. Come to the picnic. And Krishna behaving in that way. So Brahma, yes, is having this glimpse of, okay, this is who you actually are as a friend. And of course, I want to be there. It means I want to be of service according to how you feel, how you are. So again, but he's making sense of all this while he's praying. He's kind of finding himself in what he wants and realizing who is the Krishna that corresponds with that Sakya reality. So meanwhile he's praying, we will see that all these things come and go. No, Aishwarya still will be coming, but some of the other elements are coming and recede to the background, and again some Aishwarya, till eventually the Madhurya side, the intimacy of Braj will like capture Brahma completely, and at the end of the prayers he will be just like glorifying the Brajavasis. Ahobhagyam, Ahobhagyam, Nanda Gopa, Brajokasam. How wonderful these Brajavasis are. You are the supreme Brahman, still he says that, but they are your friend. And they are the friends of the supreme absolute. What's that? He's in ecstasy rolling on the ground and so on. So, anyhow, continue with Jiva Goswami for a minute. We have a few minutes?
Yeah.
So, again, Brahma is hinting at this. I'm like your baby, do not be offended, and so on. And Krishna, Jiva Goswami saying, in case Krishna were to reply, but the baby remains in mother's belly, are you staying in my belly? Remember, similar to what you mentioned before. So Brahma says at this point that different philosophers may say, like the Mimamsakas, the world exists, or the followers of Sankhya, world does not exist. But however they may like to think, nothing exists outside of you, Brahma is saying. So, yes, I'm in your belly, in that sense. In other words, both asti and nasti, nasti in Sanskrit, no, existence and non-existence are within Krishna, if you want to put it like that. Also, asti can refer to conscious objects and nasti to inert matter, if you will, which is impermanent flux within Krishna's body. If you want to take Krishna's body again in connection to Garbhdakshai Vishnu, who is the source of the Paramatma of the universes, if you will. In other words, there is no existence to be found outside of him. And that's what Krishna himself confirms in the 9th chapter of the Gita, I think sixth verse, where he's saying that as the mighty, is it in English? Mighty wind is blowing everywhere and rest always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. So I'm the place of rest for everything and everyone. Okay, let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sararta Darshini. He's saying, he basically repeats the above points, so I won't repeat them all. But he concludes his commentary quoting another verse from the Gita, another verse from the same chapter, 9th chapter, verse 17, where Krishna is saying, I am the father, mother, grandfather, and support of the universe. So as we mentioned, in one sense, God is everything. So Brahma is realizing, is making this point. In this verse, you are my mother. Next verse, he will say, you are my father. And in one sense, sometimes Acharya says, Krishna is, in one sense, also Brahma's grandfather. Because technically speaking, Brahma was born from a lotus. So the lotus may be taken as Brahma's father, mother. And the father of the father is Garbhdakshai Vishnu. And of course, Krishna is the source of all that. So the implication is that all existence is within the body of Bhagavan. But at the same time, that's it, this, what Brahma is realizing, everything is within your body, but yet your body is standing in front of me. No matter how... it's good that we try to wrap our head around that to reach the point of collapse that says, no, it's not possible, I cannot reach it with that. That's it. You have to use your head to the point that your head tells you, I can no longer continue this journey. You need another method, some transrational method to reach beyond that. But you have to use your head till the point that your head shows its limits. You have not to be intellectually lazy, if you will. Siddhanta Valiya Chitna Akara Alas, Krishna Das Karel say, do not be lazy. Try to use your head to think about those things till the point that your head says, enough. No, give me a break, and understand that if you want to go beyond, you need to apply yourself to transrational methodology. That's what we call sadhana. Sadhana is not a rational thing, but it's not irrational either. It's transrational. That's the point. So the idea is, whatever is outside of Krishna is inside of Krishna at the same time. That's the implication. And again, the implication of Brahma is, since everything is within your belly, I am no exception to that rule. I am inside your belly, and therefore, again, forgive my offenses, just as a mother forgives the offenses of a child within the womb. So in this way, Brahma's humility, as we were mentioning, keep increasing. It's good to keep that in mind, although it may seem that he's expressing in a more bold way. The point has been made is each one of the 40 verses of the Brahma Stutis is like an upgraded version of Brahma's humility. So the ideal is the same. Like if you are praying to Krishna, hopefully your next prayer will be more humble than the previous one. Because if not, are you actually praying? If I pray to Bhagavan in a certain level of humility and the next prayer my humility went down, how much can you consider that a prayer? So ideally, proper prayer spirit has to take you to progressive, upgraded levels of prayer. And of course, you cannot pray without being humble. When you take out humility from the prayer equation, you have I don't know what, but not a prayer per se.
Just telling something.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Demanding something, yeah. You know, expecting stuff, not like, yeah. Give me this, whatever, but real prayer has to include, I mean, you can put them as synonyms. Real prayer has to have humility, and you are real humble. You basically are in a spirit of prayer, even if you are not officially praying. If you are inhabiting that humility, you are inhabiting the realm of prayer, if you will. No? Mm-hmm. So in this way, Brahma's humility is increasing. And although he's saying, resorting to this particular way of saying things, he's really feeling, I have committed lila aparad. I have committed different types of aparad. We mentioned that in previous classes. I've committed rupa aparad, offenses to your form, by considering your form as hoax. Then I committed aparad to the rupa of your friends and cops by trying to kidnap them. And on top of that, I committed offense to your lila because I tried to interrupt your picnic. So I commit lila aparad, rupa aparad, and as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, interestingly, although Brahma committed offense to the form of Krishna by considering that form like not the real deal, but to his lila, the name of Krishna remained with him. In which form? Next birth, Brahma appears as? And he is? Namacharya. So you can see how much the name remained with him. So that's the idea. Even if you commit seva aparad, which sometimes is considered offense to the form of Krishna, the deity, and so on, Nam's still there as a shelter. So this is another important point of the Brahma Stuti and Brahma Vimohanlila. You may engage, commit rupa aparad, guna aparad, lila aparad, but Nam is still there, if you take shelter properly. And Brahma did, as we know. He realized, oh my God, I offended form, qualities. I have no other resort at Sri Nam. He went there as Haridas Thakur, and he really took shelter, as you know, in Sri Nam. Haridas Thakur, Namacharya Ki Jai. Yeah, yeah. So, this way, some words we wanted to share today. Next verse, which I think we will share these days here. Brahma will continue to elaborate his thesis after establishing Krishna as the source of the first, second Purusha. The third one will be included there. And he will get closer to this main point of tattva of his series, which is Narayan, God, is an aspect of Krishna. Krishna's two Bhagavans, so yeah, very unique Gaudiya contribution. God is an aspect of Krishna. So I don't know if there are any further comments or questions. Devotees also connected online.
That's a very Namrup Guna Lila. Could it be said Brahma also offended his qualities by, that was kind of melded with the doubt of his form as doubting his qualities as Bhagavan?
Yeah, generally Rupa and Guna are quite intertwined, the two of them. Yeah, yeah, so that falls also into the equation. So.
Clever observation.
Yeah, so that's an important point. Yeah. Nam remains even... I mean, of course, this is not like, okay, so I can offend those things, but I have Nam. No, if you calculate it that way, that's an offense to Nam.
Yeah.
Like if you say I can engage in sinful activities, but so Nam will be delivering. Exactly, so that extends to the same criteria. Mm-hmm. But if... that calculation is not there, but that happens, that it happened to Brahma, we can see how much generously Srinam still will host you. How much you will be able to embrace Nam. If you are sincere, and Brahma, we can see, he was so sincere that he resorted to Srinam, and he really resorted to Srinam, take shelter then, to become Namacharya Haridas Thakur. Okay. So I think if there are no further questions, we can leave here today. And we will continue speaking today in the evening.
In the evening, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much to all of you. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda.